Hello again on Circles of Change. Thanks for sticking with us for our Labor Day show. We've got a great hour coming up. First off, with Paul DeHart, who's Chief Operating Officer. Oh, geez, how are you this morning, Paul?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. We get to talk some engineering talk here, that's for sure, between the two of us. Paul is involved in a late-stage startup that's based between San Diego and Austin, commercializing inventions related to continuous variable transmissions, a key component that plays into the system efficiencies of vehicle powertrains. For you non-engineers, this is about shifting gears and speed. It's a metaphor, too, for Paul's 30-year career that spans a variety of positions in general management, sales, manufacturing, engineering, product design, and operations. Prior to joining Fallbrook, Paul served as president of a manufacturing-focused interim management and consulting firm based out of Michigan. He's worked as a director of international development for a different firm in Michigan and then chief operating officer of a manufacturing company in Massachusetts. He holds a B.S. in electrical engineering from the University of Rochester and an MBA from Harvard Business School, and he launched his career with General Motors, where for 18 years, Paul enjoyed increasingly responsible management roles with various divisions, including working in Germany, Portugal, and France, and he has supervised operations both in the U.S., Europe, Mexico, and China. So clearly a man of the world. Paul, Fallbrook Technologies, give us a quick background on the firm.
Well, we... Company's been about 7 years in existence, and an inventor from California invented a continuously variable transmission that works off the ball bearings rather than either belts or gears. And the fundamental technology is having a post through the bearing allows for changing the angle of the bearing to various mechanical connections. And that allows for changing gear ratios, and in effect is the same as shifting a gear, but without that discontinuity of going from one gear to the next.
When, again, for us, for the non-engineers, for the users, you would not know to feel the clunky and bumping that might happen. And I know the first application or the area you folks are, have gone in with the technology is in bicycles, right? So this idea of, you know, being able to create really a higher, efficient, faster bicycle.
Yeah, if you think about the derailleur system on a bike, I grew up with a 10-speed and then went to 21, and I think they're up to 28 now. And what we've been able to do is allow for the shifting of the product just on a maybe a quarter to a half turn on the bike handlebar is the same as shifting through about 17 to 20 of those gears.
And so the... Boy, I can imagine, particularly for professional racers, this must be a really interesting opportunity. And it's been out on the circuit already, Paul?
Well, no, it's not. Actually, it's the other end of the market. It's
okay.
It's more for commuters and bike e-bikes. And so our biggest market is in Europe because especially in Holland, they about 90% of our sales have been to Europe, and primarily in Holland originally, and now into Germany. And as the Europeans are transitioning towards electric motor assist bikes because of the fuel costs in Europe, we're anticipating a large growth in that business.
And Paul, the term e-bike, you might want to explain what that means.
Well, in Europe now, and you'll see in the U.S. pretty soon, you can actually pedal the bike. But if you're going up a hill, an electric motor will kick in and assist your human power and make it a almost a quasi-hybrid vehicle.
You bet. In fact, we have a lot of e-bikes here in Tucson. We don't have the hills necessarily, but because of the 365-degree days of sunshine, except in monsoon season right now, that it is another form of alternative transportation.
Yeah. Well, you can send the monsoons to Texas.
Okay, yeah, we'll do what we can to help you out there.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, back to your career. I mean, here you find yourself in a late-stage company, actually being part of the startup of the firm, as opposed to your earlier years being, at the time, one of the largest global companies on the planet. Share with us some of those career experiences along that way, that transition for you on a personal level.
Well, probably the biggest change for me was when I went to Europe. I went over to Germany, worked in sales from Germany, went to Portugal where I was plant manager, and then later stage I helped launch electric power steering, which again is an energy saving device, and through that lived lived in multiple cultural environments, multiple job environments in sales, manufacturing, engineering, and gave me a really unique of working in different countries along with the organizational differences between those three different functional areas.
And can you cite an example? I mean, actually what you're telling us is like multiple cultural layers playing at the same time. You know, the differences in nationality as well as the different in functional departments, and then probably the differences in the size of the company, too. It's like almost three ways.
Well, and fortunately for me, when I was with General Motors and I was in Portugal, as I used to affectionately say, I was 4,000 miles from help.
Yeah.
Both for the good and the bad.
I was going to say for the good and the bad, yeah.
You know, you're very independent, so you make decisions, you make them quickly. But if you did need help, it was a long way away, and you became much more self-reliant as a result.
And the as you think about some of those self-reliant experiences that you went through, to then, I believe if I recall your career track, coming back then into the larger organization, did you feel at times you needed to open the window to get the fresh air?
Yeah, probably the, you know, when there's two huge big transitions you make as an expatriate. One is moving to a new country, because even moving from Germany to Portugal, different cultures between the two, and you kind of initially downplay the difference, but you have to really be aware of the differences. And then when you come back to the U.S., you know, you have changed, and the country has changed. You know, the culture's changed, or the business climate, or the political climate, you know, lots of things changing, especially with the speed of change today. And so you think back, you know, you've been gone 4 or 5 years, you think, oh, I can just drop back in, but that's really not the case. You know, and I would say in my case, probably had a bigger cultural readjustment coming back than going over.
Mm-hmm. And you hear that from many people, an expat. And, you know, let's maybe open our mind to this. This isn't just about an expat, meaning an expatriate assignment between the U.S. and abroad, or other abroad sectors as you did. But, you know, people can go through that same shell shock of taking a move from moving from engineering to sales, right, as you did, or from engineering to manufacturing. I can recall even at the time in which I requested a move like that, I was counseled by those who've been longtime mentors saying, what, are you crazy? you don't want to do that. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If my generation of leaders is going to be smarter than yours, I think you need to get me over to engineering for a period of time, with a parachute perhaps to rip me out if things don't go well. But it's a whole different dynamic in this day and age, isn't it, Paul, for, you know, those you mentor and coach, of course, that this idea of cross-functional actual picking up and going as well, and whether you call that an expat or really a major move with some sort of lifeline, is very important.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. The fellow that asked me to go to Portugal, I worked for him for 3 years and always felt I had a lifeline if things didn't go well. However, you know, moving into manufacturing really opened a lot of opportunities for me. And subsequently, when I came back to the U.S., I ended up staying in manufacturing, where the first 15 years of my career had been in product engineering.
Yeah.
So a very different shift re-energized me and has, you know, led to a lot of opportunities. And quite frankly, with the international nature of manufacturing today, if you don't have a multicultural approach to your manufacturing, you're going to really be locked into a very narrow focus.
And not be able to capitalize on, you know, entering markets because of that, but also the mindset, the diversity of thinking, how people approach problems differently, right?
Yeah, it was interesting when I was in Portugal, my staff, I had a Frenchman, an Italian, a Mexican American, and two Portuguese reporting to me. So getting decisions was always an interesting challenge.
I bet. Well, take us now to that, leveraging that, Paul, and your attraction in joining Fallbrook Technology. I mean, it's headquartered in San Diego. You've got the technical community with you there in the greater Austin area. Your responsibilities as chief operating officer, help us understand what that role is all about today.
Well, the role is really focused on the engineering and operations side. We have business-centric commercial managers, because our bike business is very different than our automotive, is very different than we had a wind turbine business, which we spun out. but each market being so different that it's very difficult to find the commercial knowledge to really focus on that. So we split the commercial side from the engineering operations side. Startup, a big challenge is you're trying to develop and validate a new technology, in our case, from a product standpoint. Mm-hmm. You're launching new manufacturing processes with a new product. And then to compound that, as a startup, you're growing. So you're adding people and from multiple companies. So getting the common processes and common, I'll say, language for people as they come in, as you're growing, is I think one of the biggest challenges in a startup. But having had those processes in other companies, it makes it easier to pull from your experience and say, okay, at this stage we need this type of process, mm-hmm. and knowing it already exists and the basic framework of what you're looking for allows you to put those processes in at a time before they're really needed. So you're trying to anticipate maybe 6 months to a year ahead of time what process you need at what stage, and be prepared to drop it in as the organization requires.
Or actually maybe even pull it out if you realize you've put it in too soon or not in robust enough fashion, right?
There's always a balance of becoming too bureaucratic too quick.
Yeah, and that goes back to this 4,000 miles away from help for good.
That's right.
And the bad, that you kind of sometimes want to eschew process side to make sure you have innovation and fun, but the other side of it is you've got people that are wired, particularly in the technical community, that really like to have that step-by-step, or even if it's kind of circuitous, right?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges for us as an organization is early stage startup, you have the risk takers and I would say the more entrepreneurial folks who can really develop, I'll say, a one-off example of the technology. Mm-hmm. But then as you go through your product launch, you need more discipline. And instead of how do I make one, how do I make 1,000 and then 100,000 and then 1,000,000, mm-hmm. and it takes a different level of discipline. And at times, the creativity that you want when you're building one, you want to have a different discipline level and maybe less creative but more regimented so that you can make it repeatable.
Yeah. I liked your reference about getting to a common language. Of course, that was the same picture of your staff back in Portugal. And I think your common language didn't necessarily mean the verbal language, but it can come down to even understanding what phase your development is in, is what you're saying.
It's a language Sarah and I've lived in before, but the phase management of product programs, or we call it the product commercialization process, is really critical, because what I'll say the salespeople do in the defining of the product is really critical for the engineering, and then the development of a manufacturing strategy early on helps the engineers design the product correctly. And then as you get closer to production, the salespeople's roles change, the operation people roles change, and same with the product engineer. So knowing how those roles are going to evolve as the product goes towards commercialization is really critical.
And Paul, do you think that how those roles are changing is actually a different process or a different step or different phase than what you or I would have seen earlier in our careers? I mean, just with this? No?
I think it's fairly similar in, get a plan, mm-hmm. develop the plan, execute the plan, and then have a feedback system so that you can react to the discontinuities that are always going to occur. I think what's more complicated when we started is you're now doing it across 1, 2, 3 continents.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have 3 or 4 different cultures interacting to help make it a little bit tougher.
But at the same time, you know, doing it across 3 cultures will in time open up other windows, whether it be opening up new markets for you or contacts that you can tap on.
Yeah, and I think from a personal satisfaction standpoint, seeing the first time I was in China was 15 years ago. And for the people who haven't been to Shanghai, there was one side of the river that was developed, the other side was not. And today, the other side that was just farmland that 15 years ago is now about an 8 or 10 million person city.
Wow, wow, exactly.
And you, when I was there, it was 95% bicycles and maybe 5% cars, but all the cars were taxis. You know, today you see a middle class that's evolved. You see, you know, kids with cell phones and, you know, a much more open environment than when your first time to China. And so to see that whole culture open up as a result of the economic development is really satisfying to me, that these people that were really oppressed and just above a subsistence mm-hmm. level survival are now, you know, enjoying developing into a middle class economy. So
very exciting prospect. Paul, tell us about your team. You're based in Austin, Texas, right?
Yeah, we have engineering operations. We just acquired an auxiliary power unit company. This company, if you think about a truck driver driving across the country, especially this summer, they want to be cool when they stop overnight. And we've developed an auxiliary power unit that allows them to turn off their main engine and then run a very small engine that saves about a gallon of fuel per hour for the truck driver, and allows that person, you know, if they drive or idle their vehicle 2,000 hours a year, that's $2,000 a year we could save them mm-hmm. that, you know, otherwise would be going into fuel, into the environment, and out of their pockets. So,
which, of course, most people know that the APU business really is associated with a lot of airplanes, of course. That's what kicks on when you're sitting on the runway, you're loading the plane before you take off. Paul, the opportunities for your company, again, as you've mentioned, you're starting here with the commuter and e-bike business. Where do you see it evolving?
Well, one of the unique things about our continuously variable transmission is we can make it very small, and there's a couple of focuses we could take. One would be for what people would think would be the normal transmission. However, we've decided to delay competing in that market and focus on alternate power consumption devices mm-hmm. like your alternator or your air conditioning compressor, because they are locked into the speed of the engine. And if you are idling in the summer in Arizona, your car wants to cool off, but your engine's running slow, so you can only cool off so fast. Well, with our technology, you can actually speed up the compressor without having to speed up the engine completely. You know, you have to bump it up a little bit to take the load, but it you can get the performance you need at idle when you're sitting in traffic and et cetera. And then when you go down the highway, we can actually slow the compressor down mm-hmm. so you're not consuming power or fuel when you don't need it. And so as we launch this product, you know, the engineers will figure out with software how to optimize the performance and optimize the fuel economy depending on what the load is required, and give the engineers a chance to, you know, maybe take half a mile per gallon, a mile per gallon fuel savings for devices that were running and just heating and not providing value, and then we can save fuel for the consumer.
You bet, and exactly. So the role that your business is playing in this whole field of alternative energy or sustainability is really, really important. Paul, what do you think some of your biggest challenges are now for you personally in the role, this continuing having to shift your own gears as your role as a COO is evolving too?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for any of us is developing our people. Mm-hmm. And I'm a real believer in continuous improvement, but to me, continuous improvement requires training and empowerment. And sometimes if you're empowering people, it may take longer initially to get something done, but if you really develop a high-powered team, they make decisions and run, and having that trust in your people and the ability that they're going to make the right decisions, I think really takes a clear statement of what the values of the company and the goals of the company are. And then I truly believe people will make intelligent decisions, and they will actually perform in the long run faster than if you tried to do it yourself.
Or even that you could possibly predict what they could bring. Now, I would certainly think at the hotbed of that for you folks is the whole role of innovation and constantly this creativity invention piece of it.
Yeah, you know, we have some really bright folks, and keeping up, you know, we do, when we have visitors, we do a round table where people kind of describe their background, and it's a pretty humbling experience for any of us.
So that they can bring to bear some of the inventions they've come up with or the other products they've been involved with?
Yeah, and, you know, in our bike product, as an example, one of our folks made an invention that allowed us to take a third of the weight out of the bicycle, and we reduced our part count, which is cost, from 312 parts down to 160. But it took a combination of, you know, I'll say regular engineering discipline with a very creative invention.
Well, and of course, that whole idea of taking the total weight out of the system to improve its efficiency, but also the whole portability of the bike.
Yeah, because right now we weigh maybe a pound more than a derailleur system.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is if we can get it to the same or lower weight, you know, then that takes one argument out of the purchase decision.
You got it. For those interested, you can learn more about Paul's company, Fallbrook Technologies. The website is fallbrooktech.com. And Paul, how is it you think you've changed the most, leading change in this environment where you are currently?
Well, I have a lot more gray hair than I used to.
Still a handsome guy. Still a handsome guy.
No, it's
that prompts wisdom. That's a signature of wisdom, Paul.
No, you learn from your mistakes. That's why I'm a fast learner. But you know, I think it's just continually looking for what your people can do well, and it takes listening to them and listening to their aspirations, and you know, make sure they have the tools to do the best they can, and they'll always overperform if you allow them to do that.
That's great. Well, Paul DeHart from Fallbrook Technologies, our topic today was shifting gears for an even faster future. I would say also more efficient and innovative at the same time. Thanks for joining us, Paul. We'll keep track of the progress as your company moves from late stage to full-blown production. Congratulations.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.